The Situation of Education, Episode 5, The Long View. There are a lot of players in education in British Columbia, as in every province across Canada. While classroom teachers and school staff and administration are the frontline players, they're overseen by a lot of people and organizations behind the scenes. For example, school district personnel, from district vice principals and human resources staff to superintendents and trustees, oversee the day-to-day operations of keeping school doors open and keeping classrooms populated with teachers and students. Teachers themselves are also overseen by the BC Teachers Federation, the Teachers Union, while principals and vice principals are overseen by the BC PVPA, another union body. The districts are, of course, overseen by the Ministry of Education, which works in tandem with the Teacher Regulation Branch and the Council of Teachers to set curriculum and to govern the certification of BC teachers. This means that university faculties of education also have a role to play, as do the deans that oversee them. It is a truly dizzying array of players, and over the course of our podcast seasons, we hope to shed some light on how they all work together. But I think a really good thing to consider before we start unpacking all of these constituent parts is the question of what are we educating for? Mandatory public schooling is in its relative infancy compared to older and less formal types of education, such as learning from parents, grandparents, community, elders, apprenticeship situations, and experiential learning. Formal schooling, as it developed after the Industrial Revolution, had an array of aims as diverse as religious instruction, literacy, and the preparation of a workforce capable of meeting the needs of industry. In colonial countries such as Canada and in many African countries, formal education was seen as a means of civilizing Indigenous children. Former superintendent of the Department of Indian Affairs, Duncan Campbell Scott, famously wrote in 1920 that the goal of the residential school system was to get rid of the Indian problem. Schools and schooling have become increasingly democratic and inclusive over the past century. In fact, in summarizing the findings and calls to action of the recent Canadian Commission on Truth and Reconciliation, Justice Murray Sinclair has offered that education has gotten us into this mess and education will get us out. In practice, this means that in addition to providing basic education to young Canadians in the areas of language, literacy, arts, sciences, and maths, educators are now focused as well on social justice, the development of empathy, and the re-examination of Canadian histories and values. In short, education is a massive social project, requiring the support of a broad array of partnerships implemented by a devoted group of skilled professionals. And what happens in schools continually defines and redefines the future of our country. Recently, I had the opportunity to speak with one of the major players in British Columbia education. Dr. Bly Frank is the Dean of the Faculty of Education at the University of British Columbia. As you'll hear in a second, I met with Dr. Frank in his office, which unfortunately resulted in really poor sound quality. However, we've done our best to clean up the episode for you as much as possible with a few bridging narratives while still allowing Dr. Frank's own voice and words to shine through. We hope you'll find the overall effect not dissatisfying. I'm here with Dr. Bly Frank. Hi, Dr. Frank.
Hello.
Hi. Could you tell us a little bit about your role as dean?
Yes. So, well, as you might know, it's a very large faculty with about 180 tenured faculty and about 800 teacher education candidates and 2,400 master's students and about 400 doctoral students. So, as I said, a very large faculty. And my job as dean is to oversee really all the functions from staffing, to faculty hiring, to finance, to programs, to research, to teaching, and also to represent the faculty in the broader university community, to represent the faculty in the BC community, to represent the faculty nationally, and to represent the faculty internationally. So, of course, I have a senior leadership team, each of whom has a particular portfolio, be that the Associate Dean of Research or Associate Dean of Administration, Faculty Affairs, who provide great support and assistance for me to do that wide range of activities.
That is a massive portfolio, so it touches on a number of aspects of expertise you have to call upon in order to get it all together.
That's correct.
Wow. So you've had a long career in education. What are the most significant changes you've observed in the development and delivery of education over those years?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think probably one of the main ones is the move from seeing teacher as the depositor of all knowledge in students' heads,
right,
to a much more different approach to learning, so that we would focus on learning rather than on teaching, including the teacher as a learner. So a really big paradigm shift in the approach to thinking about learning, where students themselves come with a great deal of knowledge and also are explorers in the learning process. So that would be one.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is attention to the diversity of learners, with a particular recognition of the number of students whom we might say come from historically marginalized backgrounds for one reason or another. And how it is that we actually begin to think about the diverse needs of that diverse community of learners and meeting those needs in more appropriate ways. So I could speak about that as students who come to our system from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. I could speak about it in terms of the students who come from our Indigenous communities, and so on. So I think that a recognition of the diversity and a recognition that not all learners are the same, and not all learners come into schooling with the same repertoire of experiences to begin that schooling process, is a real shift then from treating them all the same.
Dr. Frank told me about his first assignment as a beginning teacher in the Maritimes in 1969. He was assigned to teach homeroom 8G in a school where students were streamed by IQ. The further along in the alphabet the homeroom was, the lower the students. He immediately noticed a disproportionately large number of boys in his class, as well as a disproportionate number of students from impoverished homes. While he didn't have the tools to do a formal analysis of the situation at the time, intuition told him that something was not quite right about that. It was statistically improbable that boys and children from struggling families scored lower in IQ evaluations so much more frequently than girls or children from wealthier families. This problem would eventually drive him to graduate school, where he experienced great success and changed the trajectory of his career. Dr. Frank continues to work through the lens of social justice and honors those moments when intuition tells us that what we are doing is not really serving students as well as it could be.
So that was the personal shift for me.
Right.
And I think it also was the shift in the landscape, because the research was being done to actually offer a much more social analysis of schooling than had previously been the case.
Right, so you're sort of tapping into a zeitgeist at the time that really then informed your own research.
Yeah.
So based on all of those experiences, which are fascinating, what would you say now are the most important characteristics you hope to develop in teacher candidates here at UBC?
Curiosity and passion.
Right.
I think, of course, we would want to offer them all the practical skills to be competent, to be able to enter a classroom and do the best they are able to do. But, practice makes practice, so a lot of that comes with practice. But having teacher candidates who are going out into the profession, who are passionate about what they do, and who have immense curiosity about their own learning which also means about learning about their students, learning about their communities, learning about new pedagogies, learning about and having a self-awareness of their own behavior. So all of that for me is tucked into curiosity. And then add some passion to that, and you probably got the makings of a good teacher.
Curiosity and passion, what fabulously evocative words. In fact, as Dr. Frank spoke, I was thinking about how his work connects to that of Dr. Paulo Freire, whose writing also focused on the importance of curiosity and passion to learning. Without curiosity, there's little to drive us forward in education, and without passion, there's little to sustain our momentum. Another thing Dr. Frank mentioned that resonated with me was the notion that practice makes practice. This seems to me to be a good place to start thinking about what is really important in how we deliver teacher education. We're not perfect creatures who create perfect lesson plans that unfold in perfect ways in our perfect classrooms. What we do is practice. And every time we practice, we reflect on what went well in our work and how we can do better. We know that's one of the most important capacities we can help student teachers develop as we move them forward into schools, and it's clear that Dr. Frank keeps this at the center of his own practice as well.
I also, you know, in line with my own particular interests here, I know that you're a great supporter of Indigenous education initiatives at UBC. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and some of the things that have driven you towards promoting Indigenous education and interests? Mm-hmm.
So it probably comes from a wider range of, located within a social justice framework.
Right.
So I've always had a particular politic around inequities. Grew up in a household where there was an awareness of this. Both as a teacher and as an academic in that whole area, and I've done a lot of work when I was in Nova Scotia in the African Nova Scotia communities and also in the Mi'kmaq community.
Mm.
So I didn't think I would do another gig, but when the position here as dean at UBC in the Faculty of Education was available and eventually offered to me, one of the reasons I chose to come here was because of the work that this faculty was doing in Indigenous education, particularly then the work of Dr. Joanne Archibald, whom I'd known for many years.
Right.
And that was a draw for me. I think it speaks not only to the politic and practice within the portfolio of Indigeneity, but it speaks to the wider portfolio of the commitment to issues of social justice in the faculty. So I was delighted to be offered the position, and since then, yes, one of our pillars, not just mine, but certainly within the faculty, has been the support in numerous ways of Indigenous education.
Which I greatly appreciate, and we here at UBC have both the NITEP program, the Indigenous Teacher Education Program, and now we've introduced more Indigenous education into the mainstream program. How, do you see those two things interacting well with one another or playing off of one another?
Most definitely. So there are many kind of prongs to this, whether it's the hiring of and increasing the number of Indigenous faculty we have, increasing the number of Indigenous staff, increasing the number of Indigenous students. So that's really about numbers, but it's also about visibility, it's about awareness in hiring processes and procedures and so on.
Right.
So we want it to be a lot more than about numbers. So it's about an awareness, and an awareness is lots more than a sensitivity for me. It's an awareness which hopefully brings a responsibility and an accountability to issues of Indigeneity in a general sense, but specifically within this faculty around Indigenous education. So yes, we have the largest number of Indigenous students in our NITEP program that we've ever had. So we're doing quite well on the numbers. And we've got some work to do in a number of areas. As you're well aware, we offer our program in 3 and sometimes 4 community sites in Indigenous communities. But the expectation has been after the 2 years that those candidates will transition to the UBC campus. When you live in a fly-in or water-in-only community of 300 people, and you're a mother of 4 children in our NICAP cohort, and the expectation is for year 3 you will transition to the UBC campus with 60,000 plus students. And transitions in general are quite challenging for most people.
Right.
But that transition has offered, of course, its challenges. So Dr. Hare and I are working on that to have a different model. So I want to give us an example that we're doing well, and I'm really proud of the faculty and what it does in Indigenous education. But there's lots left to do. One of my favorite verbs is infiltration. So rather than having the course that we, you know, I say 40 years ago we discovered women existed in the academy, so we added on the 13th chapter in the economics textbook, left the first 12 chapters as they were, generally about men in economics, but the 13th chapter, women in economics. Well, in some ways we still do that around Indigenous education. We add the course on. So I never want to take away from that, because having the course is better than not having the course.
Right.
But how do we actually infiltrate the entire teacher education program with Indigenous ways of knowing, Indigenous principles of learning, so that it's not siloed off into a course? And I think we're getting there and we're working at it, but we're not there.
As I listen to Dr. Frank speak, it's clear that he is not only interested in working to improve educational conditions for marginalized populations, but that he's also interested in determining how those populations come to be marginalized in the first place. He discussed his excitement at coming to UBC because he was aware of the good work Dr. Joanne Archibald was doing in Indigenous education and with the NITEP program. One of his key goals has been to continue to promote and preserve Indigenous programming and educational initiatives so that Indigenous people are not only drawn to UBC to further their academic studies and careers, but that they find a welcoming and supportive place when they arrive. He recognizes that this remains a key area of growth for the university at large. And although the NITEP program, UBC's Indigenous Teacher Education Program, is continuing to grow in numbers, Dr. Frank acknowledged that we need to keep up our efforts in this area to increase the presence of Indigenous educators not only on reserve schools, but in public school systems as well. We have a long way to go, but from our conversation, I'm confident that Dr. Frank is doing his best to lead us there. In fact, he revealed during our chat that one of his favorite words is infiltration. It occurred to me as he spoke that Dr. Frank might have something of a trickster role in this drive to ensure that Indigenous education and learning principles are not just a one-off or checked boxes, but rather fully integrated and deeply meaningful aspects of good education, cutting across all subject areas, and if I'm not mistaken, across all faculties within the university as well.
How do we actually infiltrate the entire teacher education program with Indigenous ways of knowing, Indigenous principles of learning, so that it's not siloed off into a course? And I think we're getting there and we're working at it, but we're not there.
Right. What I really appreciate about your perspective is that it is genuinely holistic in considering the whole person. That example that you gave, the mother of 4 in the flying community, it's a lot more than just the delivery of courses. It's how do we actually support our learners as human beings.
That's right. Around housing, if they are going to transition here, what does it mean around housing? What does it mean? I mean, having a room, a lounge in the longhouse is really important as a gathering site. But, you know, there are practical realities to people's lives, like housing, like child care, like schooling, and so on. So, yes, there's a lot of things that need to be considered around a life rather than the delivery of a program.
Exactly. Thank you. As a final question, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about some of the developments you find most exciting in recent educational research and what you hope they'll mean for the future, sort of your blue sky vision of where we're going in education.
Well, I think that the intersection of the social sciences and what we might call the neurological sciences is an interesting one. So we're learning lots about the brain, and I don't want that bio kind of model to override, but I think it's an interesting research that's being conducted finally we're realizing much, much more around that bodies exist in an interdisciplinary world, and bodies themselves are very interdisciplinary, if you want to put it that way. So that's exciting, that's interesting. I think that the whole area of technology is just astounding, if not overwhelming, all of us, but in the learning process. I think the attention given to our Canadian, and throughout the world, but in our case, the Indigenous population within Canada, and with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and the move forward, and they're again being responsible and accountable as educational institutions to those recommendations. I think teacher training has finally moved to educating educators rather than the notion of training someone, and that's a great and exciting shift. If we can begin to think about it that way. I think discourse is really important about how we write and speak ourselves and others into existence. So changing that language so that we think about it in a different kind of way about what we're doing in teacher education. So there's lots of things that are exciting.
I love that phrase, how thinking about how we think and speak ourselves into existence. I think that's such a poignant place to end. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, you're very welcome. I'll just say one more thing about that. You know, I actually do, well, I suppose you could in spiritual, I don't know. I don't think you can exist outside of the discourse that speaks and writes us into existence.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's really so important to think about changing the discourse, because it means that people get spoken and written into existence in a different way.
So we can actually see them and then value them through that process. I appreciate that greatly. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Frank. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And good luck with it all.
Thank you. Dr. Frank is the head of a very large faculty, and there are many people within the faculty whose specific responsibility it is to support the work of teacher education. One of those people is Dr. Marianne McTavish, who is currently serving as the Associate Dean of Teacher Education. I had the privilege of speaking with Dr. McTavish in her office. So in my continuing pursuit of trying to make sense of what's happening in higher education, Dr. Marianne McTavish, who is the current director of the Teacher Education Office at the University of British Columbia, has kindly agreed to speak with me. Hello, Dr. McTavish.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for coming in. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what drew you into education.
Sure. I think I have always wanted to work with children from a very early age. Even I would say about 12 or 13, I always was drawn toward experiences in working with children. I can remember having an experience where I was in seventh grade and the kindergarten teacher needed early morning help with her kindergarten students, taking them through kind of a gymnastics run through, and I remember helping five-year-olds and thinking that this was just glorious. And so I've always had those kind of experiences where I have wanted to work with young children when we had career days in the school system. But in high school, I always chose those kind of places where I could work with young children. And I keep saying young children, but young children were always my goal to work with, because they were so curious and so full of energy and had these wondrous ideas. They invigorated me. And when you work with children like that who have endless possibilities in front of them, that's really exciting. The challenges I think that I'm dealing with is the issue of racism, mm-hmm. and that has been something that we have been trying to think about and be critical about and move to a better place for probably centuries, but it's coming out more in teacher education. I think there's an element of social justice, making sure that everyone's treated equally, that there's fairness and equity. But those are society challenges as well. But they play a big role in teacher education, because I find that education is the place where everything kind of sits and is mobilized, actually, through teacher education. And so when people have particular interests, they come to teachers so that they can teach it to their children in their classes, because it has this sort of ripple effect. So we want to be really cautious and focused in where we put our energies. Otherwise, I think we get off track and we don't address the challenges in the ways that I think we probably could.
Yeah. So much of what you said there was so resonant with me. I mean, a lot of the values that you described, especially in terms of diversity and inclusion, seem to actually match some of the First People's principles of learning, which I know are a big focus here. But I know that racism is a struggle too, and I am reminded of reading something just on the weekend about how we often think of racism as these, you know, overt acts of hatred, when really what we're often dealing with is these internalized attitudes that people are often not aware of that they carry and what their origins are. So that's a huge challenge. So in this long history of teaching that you've got in British Columbia, I shouldn't say long, in this appropriately timed history of teaching that you've got in British Columbia, are there some memorable moments that you could share with us?
I could go on for hours about the very first time that children click and get it when they learn how to read. That is probably one of the most joyous experiences I've ever had, where it just works.
Lovely.
That's what keeps me going. And then as I move on into my career, I think professional learning is still such a big part of who we are. And so I was able at the age, I had quite an advanced age, to study and get a PhD. And that was a lifelong dream for me, an accomplishment, which has led to other life experiences, which I've just treasured. So it sounds a bit trite, but I've had the full compendium, and I'm just so thankful for them. I think relationships are a big part of teaching, mm-hmm. And establishing a relationship that is conducive to learning. I also think what is incredibly rewarding about this job is that you almost reap the rewards when you see the students that you have had an impact on their life go on and make impacts on other people's lives. So that's one of the reasons why I've sort of taken a leadership role, is that you can have an impact on one child, and then you can have an impact on several children, and then you can have an impact on several teachers, and they can have impacts on several other children, and it just goes on and on. And and that's really heady stuff, and I don't mean in an ego way, but how we can do good in this world, how we can promote change. That's really exciting.
Well, I think that exponential sort of influence reminds us of how heavy our roles are as well, and what we carry. So in your position now as the director of the TEO, are there any blue sky ideas that you have for the future of education that you could share with us?
My blue sky ideas, making sure that every child has the chance for an education that helps to change the world. Hmm. I know, that's a really big blue sky.
That's what I asked for.
You did. And so, I mean, I'm also, how do we actualize that?
Yeah.
So part of that is keeping those blue sky ideas open, mm-hmm. Within view, without the clouds, to imagine. And I think often if we imagine what things could be, they get realized a lot faster than if we kind of dwell the minutiae,
mm-hmm.
right?
But the challenges are.
Yeah.
That's sort of how we do unit planning, isn't it? We think of the end that we have in mind,
yeah.
and then we sort of engineer the whole thing till we can get there.
Planning with the end in mind,
mm-hmm.
and keeping the goals out there. I mean, it really helps with how we're doing at the end. Where do we come? And part of that is, essential outcomes. I understand that, but part of that is also the piece about. How are we contributing to good citizenship,
mm-hmm.
to good stewardship, to really making the world a place where we can end poverty and end sickness? But we have the capabilities, I really do think that, and a lot of them are coming out of this university. So when I think about the 5-year-old that I taught to read, maybe one day they're creating medicines that will eradicate a disease that we haven't even come across yet, or have an impact on global warming, those bigger picture kind of things.
Right.
So that's really blue sky.
That is a beautiful blue sky bit of thinking, though. I really appreciate your time, Dr. McTavish. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're most welcome.
One thing that Drs. Frank and McTavish share in common is their passion for education and for the well-being of the students they teach. In particular, their concerns about equity and inclusion clearly characterize their work and their blue sky ideas for the future of teaching and learning. As a new faculty member, their words filled me with a great deal of hope for the future and assured me that I am working within an institution where my own values match those of my colleagues. I still have a lot of learning to do about schools, school systems, different models of education, and different kinds of research within education. But I think I'm well situated to keep that learning up, and I look forward to sharing more of what I learn with you. Thanks to our guests this week, Dr. Bly Frank and Dr. Marianne McTavish, and to our magical producer, Aaron Green. We'd also like to thank the fabulous staff and volunteers at CITR for generously hosting us. We hope you'll tune in again. Class dismissed.